The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. This week we are talking social media strategy, and my guest is Andrew Jenkins, CEO of Volterra, a social media and marketing agency, who also teaches social media strategy at the University of Toronto. Andrew, you've just published a book called Social Media Marketing for Businesses, and you talk in there particularly about scaling an integrated social media strategy. And I was very intrigued by use of the word strategy here, because I think most people think of social media as tactical. So what does a social media strategy look like?
Well, so as you mentioned, I do teach social media at the University of Toronto. And the text we've been using for the last, well, it's now a decade old, I've been teaching there for the last 8 years, is The Social Media Strategist by Chris Barger. And it was written based on his experience during General Motors bankruptcy and restructuring when he was leading communications and social media. And one of the reasons we like using that book is because there are many books out there about social media marketing, but there, you know, other than Barger and now my book, there weren't any books out there that were, shall we say, a resource, somewhat prescriptive, a bit of a roadmap or, you know, workbook for people that found themselves in a social media role in a mid to larger organization that were facing other issues beyond marketing, which were dealing with HR and a social media policy, dealing with legal. If you're in financial services or insurance or healthcare, and there's, you know, regulatory requirements that you have to adhere to or compliance, some of this is not the sexy part of social media, but it's the necessary. Some of these are necessary areas that have to be addressed. And so I wanted to kind of revisit some of the areas that Barger had focused on. And so the book is a combination of marketing insights and recommendations and case studies and hopefully valuable information. And then in addition to that, things like what kind of marketing tech stack can you put together with what kind of budget and what's your evaluation process. And we get into working with HR and compliance and social media policies. And if you're rolling out an employee advocacy program, what might be involved, and, you know, bringing in training and all those other things that are necessary to support your social media strategy.
Excellent. So it's much more than just social media of somebody yelling, quick, grab a camera, this will be a great social media post.
Yeah. To your point, that tweet or that post to Instagram that you see, there's a lot of effort and thinking that went on behind it. And so, my intention with the book is what was the thinking that went on behind it, and how can you make that a scalable and repeatable process?
Okay, so talk me through the process of creating a social media strategy. What sort of things should people be considering?
Typically, the place I recommend that people begin is with a social media audit, and that will entail looking at what sort of social media activities have gone on previously? What channels are you on? What's worked? What hasn't? Rationalizing what channels you're on and whether you need to divest yourself of some channels. Do you need to add new channels that are emerging that happen to be populated with your target audience? Then do a content audit as part of that. What kind of content do you have already, and in what form? What content have you used in social that can continue to be used, and what content has to be developed or created? And once you've got that sort of holistic view of what's gone on before, where you're at now, and then marrying that with some preliminary thoughts to what you want to do in the future, it's then devising the strategy and the supporting efforts to start rolling out your social media strategy. And it's not, to properly set expectations, it's not something you start today and you're going to see the immediate impact tomorrow. Social media is always on, and it takes time to get the flywheel spinning to build that momentum. So you need to be patient. You know, here we are talking on a podcast. There's so many podcasts that were abandoned when people realized just how much time and effort goes into them. Mm-hmm. But the podcasts that are now top of mind with everyone are, you know, 4, 5 or more years in and hundreds of episodes in. And they stayed consistent, persistent, and they, you know, they persevered, and they're being rewarded for doing so. So we'll get, you know, clients coming to us, oh, we want to start a podcast or we want to start a YouTube channel. We'll say, well, are you prepared to produce material every single week or even bi-weekly and stick with it for at least a year? Mm-hmm. And like, oh, really? Like, yeah, you may not see immediate results, but you've got, you can't, you know, don't start something that you can't stick with. And it's a good reminder to all of us.
That's thoroughly good advice. So one of the things you said there was part of the audit was looking at what worked. So how do you look at what's working? How do you analyze it in social media terms?
So you can look at, we look at social media metrics from three perspectives, or what I like to call the three C's. So the first C is community. So is your community growing? And some refer to them as vanity metrics, like likes and follows, mm-hmm. or, you know, followers and fans. And they're necessary. Yes, they're a bit of a vanity metric. Like, don't evaluate everything just by the number of followers that you have. But you want followers, but you want them to be engaged followers. And the more followers you have, the more potential reach that you have for your content, and the more potential for your content to be shared and amplified. So that there's some indirect objectives related to that. But the larger your audience, there is also a bit of a downside. The lower your engagement rate per follower. Just there's a bit of a dilution. But still, the larger objective of reach for your through that audience is the primary objective when it comes to that first C of community. The second C is content. And so we're measuring content's performance based on engagement. Did we see, you know, things moving upward to the right? Is our content performing? Is it not just garnering a like, but are people commenting? Are people sharing? Are people amplifying it? And we want to, and also, what form of content is garnering the most engagement? Is it video? Is it animated graphics? You know, most organizations default to a blog, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're good for SEO, and they should be a fundamental or, you know, foundational part of your content strategy, but they shouldn't be the only thing that you're focused on. We have to look no further than the emergence and the powerhouse that is TikTok to see that video content is dominating. And, you know, I won't bore, you know, there's plenty of stats out there that show that video content is the dominant format, no matter the channel. And that can be a bit daunting for organizations that don't refer to themselves as a video production house. And so, like, what kind of content do you have that can be repurposed and reformatted into a, you know, a richer media type format to garner more engagement? And the final C is conversion. Likes and fans and followers are nice. Getting someone to like your content, getting someone to share your content, getting someone to watch your video, those are all nice things. But we want people to respond to some sort of call to action. So we want to be using our content and reaching our audience to have corporate objectives that we are mandated to achieve. We want those pursued through our social media strategy. And so what we're trying to do is use our content and our overall social media strategy to drive an outcome aligned with our business objectives. So things like, I want people to sign up for our newsletter. I want them to register for a webinar. If I'm B2C, I want them to go to our Shopify site and buy product X or product Y. Mm-hmm. And so I want a specific business outcome as a result of all of my social media efforts. And that conversion, you know, can, again, span from signing up for a newsletter, registering for a webinar, filling out a contact form, downloading a gated piece of content. Some indication that I did this in social and here's the outcome that was generated that either on my website or in relation to my corporate activities, like, you know, hosting a webinar or listening to my podcast, or like I said, signing up for a newsletter, or buying my product, or you know, more fundamentally, like booking an appointment with a salesperson.
So the other thing I was interested in, you said that social media, you had to look for momentum and you'd got to be consistent and persistent. So that suggests that how long do I give it before I turn around and say, okay, this is not working?
I mean, not every channel that you're on is going to move at the same pace. Twitter, the shelf life of a tweet is 15 minutes. So there's a perfect example of a channel that needs more content more frequently. And that can be, you know, quite daunting. Channels like Facebook and Instagram, or even TikTok, that, you know, still have, well, Facebook less so, but Instagram and TikTok, where organic engagement is still prevalent, there's a way to post, you know, just a few times a week and garner an audience, or garner an engaged audience. But if you talk to someone who, you know, does SEO and, you know, properly configuring websites for discoverability and supporting content for that, they'll tell you it's 6 months for your website to really start performing for you from a Google point of view, because Google takes time to index your website. And so when we tell clients, like, it's 6 months before social really starts to pay off, and to properly set expectations, especially if they're starting from zero. If they're just setting up their social channels for the very first time, they have no audience, then we need paid budget to get their Facebook page off the ground and even followers for their Twitter account, if they're going with Twitter. And at least we have those options available to us where we can do paid campaigns to garner followers, not so much for some of the other channels. And so you've got to rely on content for visibility, maybe boosting content. So there's a lot of, you know, groundwork that has to be laid to, you know, get things moving, and then, like as I described earlier, get the flywheel spinning and get momentum. There, social is not a quick fix, and social will not replace organic or direct traffic to your website. You want it to be a complement, and you want it to, you know, if you're measuring your Google, looking at your Google Analytics, and you're looking at organic and direct in terms of referral traffic, and you see social. Like I said, social won't replace those other two, but you want to see the contribution of social from a referral traffic point of view grow over time in its own category. And then within that, what channels are driving the most traffic. But when you have a channel like Instagram, where often you're sharing visuals that are self-contained, they're not redirecting to another destination, or even TikTok, a self-contained video, you're not going to see a lot of referral traffic from those platforms in some cases to your website. But that doesn't mean they don't have a sticky and highly engaged audience on the platform themselves. So each platform has its strengths and its weaknesses and trade-offs.
That's an extremely good point. Yes. One of the things that I've been intrigued by is the idea of doing your social media as part of your workflow. So can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, oftentimes there's an expression I hear from people like, we're doing social media off the corner of our desk. They're doing social media when they get around to it, when they can carve out time in their day or their week. And what we often encourage is, when you're doing your strategic planning or your quarterly planning and quarterly review and whatever, make sure that, you know, social's at the table. And what I mean by that is, when they're when the discussion of just the overall corporate objectives are happening, you know, whether it's PR, communications, marketing, in some cases even sales, in some cases even, you know, product development, social may play a complementary role. But if they're not at the table, they can't say, well, we can actually help there, we can do this in relation to that. And it's not that they're making more work for others, they're showing that where they can deliver value. Like as an example, you know, social media listening. Product management for, you know, a tech company or just, you know, a consumer-oriented organization is always working on new products and enhancements and so on. Well, what if social media listening showed, you know, what people thought of the product or features and functions? Some of it positive, some of it negative, some of it, you know, just, you know, could be advisory in terms of where and how the product or service could be improved. And where the product management team may not be active in social, they can certainly benefit from the organization being active in social. And that's just one example. You know, again, if social's at the table, they can provide more value in a number of ways and in a number of areas. And to your question about workflow, you know, can you make it a part of the everyday operation? Can you, if you want to do things in batches so that you're always ahead of the game? We do a lot of content planning where we're two weeks to 4 weeks ahead with scheduling, with content in development, so that the more you manage it, and it's not to say that we're rigid and inflexible, but the more you plan in advance, the better you can handle anomalies or having to change things on the fly, because you have something that can be swapped in or swapped out. You're not left empty-handed. Like, you've got, we can move that post over here because we want to do something because this event came up, or, you know, one of our staff is, you know, speaking at an event. We want to put the emphasis on promoting that as opposed to, you know, what we had planned previously. And again, the better you plan, the more flexible you can be as things arise. Things that are happening in the media that you need to respond to. You need to, we've got such and such post planned for tomorrow, and now that such and such is happening in the media, when our content is juxtaposed with that, that would make us look tone deaf or insensitive. We better pull that from the plan. So again, the more you plan, the better you're organized, the better that you can adapt and adjust as the social media landscape changes.
That's great. And the other area I wanted to ask about was policies, because you talked about, in certain organizations, particularly financial services, obviously the policy side of what you can and cannot say is very important. But I wondered if there were general policies that one should have in place for social media.
Well, first and foremost, is there a code of conduct for the organization in place? And within that, is there anything in the code of conduct that speaks to social media, or more just as a representative of the organization that could extend to social media? Increasingly, we're seeing examples of people's behavior offline spilling onto social media and repercussions occurring for the organization as a result. And so it's hard to know how much you have to modify the code of conduct, or if you need to say things specific to social media. Dell had a thing called Smack You, which was a social media. Anyway, they talked about, you know, everyone should be smacked, but it was an acronym for their training program. The first level of program was for all employees, just to be familiar with social media and the implications for the organization. The next level was for people that use social media in their job, like customer service or marketing. The next level was for social media practitioners that were also in media relations, if they were going to be official spokespeople for the organization to media. And again, you know, linking that to their training. And, you know, now you hire a salesperson to use LinkedIn for business development. Their profile is owned by them and LinkedIn, not the organization. And I think there was a recent legal matter in the UK where a salesperson left the organization and the organization sued them for their connections, because those connections were made during their time as a salesperson, and the organization won. And so you need now to, in your employment contracts, to look at where social media may be playing a role in the role that they're going to have, and what the implications are in terms of the company's domain and the employee's domain. And so, yeah, there's a number of different things that have to be considered. Start, you know, is a code of conduct in place, and how comprehensive is it? Does it even touch social media? And then if you think you need to incorporate a social media policy, policy is a bad word. It sounds rather thou shalt not kind of approach, and rather draconian. A lot of organizations turn it a bit to more guidelines. If you're going to do this, we recommend. And the language that Dell would use was to protect our employees. We don't want them to make mistakes or missteps that cause them any concern. So the training is meant to encourage the use of social media, but in a safe way. that, you know, doesn't detract on the employee or the organization. And so again, it's more, it's, if they want to call it semantics or just spin, so be it, but it's how you position it. You know, look at an organization similar to yourself, see if they have a policy, a social media policy that's been made public. You know, we've reached out, we've done policies for different organizations. We've reached out to, you know, organizations similar to them that weren't competitors to say, especially in the nonprofit space where they're more collaborative. We wrote a social media policy for a client that was a nonprofit, and we, you know, leveraged a social media policy of a comparable organization with the permission of that other entity to say, rather than us starting from scratch, would you mind if we basically not copied and pasted, but leveraged a good portion of it, because they'd already gone through that exercise, and you know, they were both nonprofits, they were both, you know, charities, and so they were supportive of one another, and it worked out. And it wasn't us trying to be lazy; it was more about they've already addressed many of the issues that we're trying to address, and they had the right language. So there used to be some a database of social media policies that had been crowdsourced. Sadly, it's gone, but you can find numerous examples of social media policies online, even just to get you started.
That sounds like excellent advice. Andrew, thank you. Before I let you go, if somebody came to you and said, right, I'm inspired, I want a social media strategy in my organization, would you have some sort of top tips of where to mm-hmm. start?
So an audit that we touched on earlier, the other thing that I recommend that people do is listen. A lot of times people will jump or rush into social without a lot of thought or preparation. And the reason I bring up listening is because it can inform your content strategy, it can inform your approach to messaging. So if you do some preliminary social media listening before you even decide what channels you should be on and so on, you can start to formulate, okay, these are the platforms that we should be on because we're finding evidence of representatives of our target audience there. Oh, we shouldn't be on that one. There's nobody that we're trying to reach that's there, or it's too small a sliver of our audience to warrant so much time and energy that would be needed to serve that channel. And layer that, and then, you know, as you're listening and starting to formulate where you should be focusing your attention, you start to get the sense of what people are talking about and in what way. So one of my favorite examples to give is a friend of mine who does a lot of work in CPG, consumer packaged goods. She was working with a cough drop company, and she did some social media listening for them. And she said, when do people buy your product? And they said, oh, well, when they have a cough. And she said, no, they don't. They said, what do you mean? She said, they buy your product when they have a tickle. And they went, what? Mm-hmm. She said, they buy your product earlier than you think. And here's the social media listening analysis that we conducted to prove that. And so it changed their entire perspective on their product and the messaging that they should be using, because it changed. They realized that the buyer journey was completely different than they had assumed. And so it's insights like that that can surface from social media. Same thing with, you know, if... I use examples here in Canada of like if you're a mobile service provider. Oh, you know, why are people just trashing our brand name and social right now? Oh, it's because your toll-free line for customer service has ridiculously long wait times. Oh, why is that? Oh, it's because there's a broken link on your website to sign up for X. And so if you do this listening in advance, you can peel back the onion, you can find some systemic issues that are potentially going to impact your strategy.
Andrew Jenkins, that was absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much indeed for your time and your expertise. And if you want to get hold of Andrew's book, it is Social Media Marketing for Business. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. Great to chat with you.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.